Hilda Rupp lived a tough life. She lost her own mother when she was only 17 and helped to raise her siblings through the Great Depression. Later, she and her husband eked out a living on their farm while raising 8 children. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In spite of all of her challenges, Hilda lived her life with joy and resilience. Her daughter, Joyce Rupp, has written about her mother's life and her own journey through the grief of losing her. In her latest book, Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me, Joyce Rupp is known as a spiritual midwife. She's also a prolific author and co-director of the Institute for Compassionate Presence. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. As an author and a spiritual midwife, Joyce Rupp has guided many people through hard periods in their lives and times of grief. But when her mother died, she struggled for a long time to come to terms with her loss. Now she's written about her mother and her grief in the new book, Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. Joyce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, this was a book that you knew you wanted to write for a long time, and you share that with us in the introduction, that you wrote this 14 years after your mother died. What prevented you from writing?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, I thought I knew about grief. I've taught grief workshops and retreats for years, and I wrote Praying Our Goodbyes in 1985, and did a lot of research on grief, but it is so true that you have to enter into grief in order for it to heal. And I once heard a quote, grief has a long shelf life. It'll just keep waiting for you. And that's what happened for me, because every time once mom died, I thought, oh, I learned so much about her aging process. I want to write about this. But every time I started thinking about writing, I just saw the tears had come up again and the sadness. And so I thought, well, I'll just wait until that's over. And every year I do that. And finally, 5 years ago, I said to myself, you know, it's now or never. You're either going to write the book or you're not. And so that's when it took me those 5 years to go through my journals. And I write almost every day. So I had written down wonderful things mom had said, difficult things she had shared. And I just am amazed. I feel so differently today. I couldn't be here talking about my mother without getting kind of that feeling of, all the tears starting and coming up to the throat. I just was so healed in that process. So, it just taught me again that we really do have to be with the grieving process. But also, I think timing's everything. And I guess it wasn't time for me until then to do it. But I'm so grateful now that I've relearned that lesson again about grief.
Do you think that in a way it was difficult to let go of the grief, as if that was almost a letting go of your mother further?
Oh, wow. I'd never thought about that. But that could be an unconscious kind of thing. I think for me, because I tend to be more of a feeling-oriented person, I think it was just that I just didn't want to go there with those feelings. I didn't want to feel that bad. I felt badly when mom died, and I just thought, I just want to get over this, And I think that's true in our culture that, you want to hurry people along, don't tell me about how sad you feel a week or so after somebody you love dies, kind of thing. And I, without knowing it, I was doing that to myself. I think, just get on with it, Joyce, get over feeling sad, or don't go there if you're going to feel the way you do. So, but I think it could unconsciously been that other part of it too. But I'm glad to say that I haven't lost my mom. In fact, I think I refound her again.
Right. Yeah. Well, and introduce us to your mom. She was a remarkable, remarkable woman. Let's talk a little bit about her childhood. She came from a very large family.
Indeed. What I want to say even before I describe my mother is that I think my mother was very ordinary. She's kind of this hidden person that I think the majority of Iowa farm women are, in a way. They're sturdy, resilient, they're responsible, they're very caring of their children. But they don't make the news, you know? They're wonderful women. And my mother, you know, her childhood, she was one of 13 children. And she lived in the Great Depression. And the big turning point for her was when she was a senior in high school and she had just died. I mean, she had just graduated and her mother was pregnant with the 13th child. And I think it was a couple of days after she graduated that she found out her mother went in the hospital. And the next morning they came and told her, you know, your mother and the little baby both died. And Mom said to me, you know, I knew my mother wasn't going to make it because I was the one that cleaned up all the blood in the bedroom, you know. So here's this 17-year-old, and there's 11 living children, and she's the oldest girl. And so she takes over that household right away, you know, with her dad. And they're so poor, and it's a Great Depression. So she helps them with the great big, huge, two big gardens and, you know, made most of the kids' clothes, mended all of them, did the cooking, and, you know, the other siblings helped. But she was responsible for all of that. And I think it just set the stage for her the rest of her life. She was so resilient. And, you know, whenever she'd talk about that experience, she never talked about it like, oh, I've had a terrible life, or, you know, kind of that martyr voice, oh, self-pity, or, you know, just sorrow or whatever. It was more like, you know, this happened to me, and it was terrible losing my mother, but I went on with my life, you know. And she'd always say, you know, I had a good life. I had a good life. And, boy, when she married my dad, she was 23, and he was about as poor as you could get. They were on rented land. And it's hard to imagine now, I think, for most of us, what would it be like to not have any running water, no electricity, walk down to the cattle yard, pump the water for your drinking water. One of the hardest stories that Mom told me that I just really just felt so badly for her. She said she had two children. She was pregnant with me, and she was having men for lunch that day. They were harvesting, and so she was out of water, and she didn't know what to do because my brother was just, I think he was five, didn't want to leave us in the kitchen or in the house, and yet she couldn't take us with her down through the cattle yard. So she had him take care of him. She wasn't pregnant with me.
Anyway, leaving tiny children.
Yes, very tiny. And she said, so she walked down to the cattle yard and she went to pump the water, you know, coming up from the well. And the wind stopped just as she got there and there wasn't any water. And that's one of the few times she ever talked about crying. She said, I just stood there and cried. I didn't know what to do. And I tell you, every time she'd tell me that story, it just break my heart. I mean, she didn't cry at all. She just kind of was matter of fact about it. But it really kind of summarized her early life on the farm. And I, you know, I'm sure there are people listening today that will say, yes, I had that experience, or I know that my folks had that experience. And I think I was like 10 years old before we had electricity and running water. You know, that also didn't come until I was about 8 or 10 years old.
Well, and even without the challenges of no electricity or no running water, she also had 8 children.
Yes.
So she's a mother of 8 and doing farm work.
And, you know, you think about that, washing all those diapers out. And we had this thing called the diaper pail. Oh, my gosh, everybody hated it, you know. It's like your initial rinse of the diaper, and then you had to dump the water and then rinsed again. And then you had to, of course, wash them in the machine that was a hand wringer machine. But you think about it now. I mean, just how did she do it? How did anyone do it at that time?
Now, your mother did. There was a brief period of time in between her graduate from high school and losing her mother and her marriage where she decided that it was time for her to make money. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she became a nanny. And,
yes.
and she remembered those times so fondly. Tell me a little bit about that
part
of her life.
She absolutely loved it. I think it was 3 years after her mother died. And her younger sisters, the next closest to her, were old enough to kind of take over things. And so with her dad's, you know, blessing, she went to Cherokee and she worked as a nanny for a lawyer. And they lived in this big house. They just had a few children. Everything was clean and neat. They had money. And Mom would, she often would talk about that just so fondly. And she'd always end it with saying, I always wanted to live in a big house. And she eventually did live in a nice house. She lived in a nice condo. But I think it was that memory of that big house with, you know, just so opposite of what she had with all those children in her
own
household.
Well, and the work of a nanny is very hard, but compared to taking care of 10 or 11 siblings,
it was so easy for her. I mean, really, you know, she could go to bed at night at a decent hour and she didn't have to sew their clothes and probably didn't do any cooking either, I wouldn't imagine. So, yeah, wonderful experience for her. And it was great. It was a good, joyful memory that she had.
Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit. I mean, you talk about her resilience, but it also sounds like as a mother, she really brought a great deal of joy into her relationship with you when you were children.
Yes. You know, I just don't remember. I remember my mother working really, really hard, but my mother always had this spirit of kindness, and you just could count on her welcoming people into the house, not like, oh, this is such a pain to have company. It was like she was happy to have people. And she set up a little, I remember as busy as she was, she cleaned out an old chicken brooder and made a little house, like playhouse for my older sister and myself, and taught us how to play in the grove and did a lot of things like that.
She loved board games?
Oh, she loved board games. When she was a grandmother, when her grandchildren came in the house, they immediately went for board games because they knew grandma, they'd spend their whole time with her. And she just, yeah, she loved that kind of thing. And I think she got that spirit from her own family. Her dad was very much a happy person. And they used to do dances in their house, you know, and they'd have people over for card games. And, of course, there was always a lot of beer around. They were German, and they would have these parties. And Mom grew up, like, entertaining and liking people. And that really helped her in the hard times. I think it balanced, you know, so that she didn't become just kind of this workhorse and didn't have a life beyond that. So
she also developed a real love for nature as
yes.
a child.
You know, my mother's, her ancestry's from Dyersville, Iowa, and so her grandparents lived on a farm, and she was lucky enough to go one summer. They put her and her older brother on the train. Her grandparents paid for tickets, and Mom spent a good portion of the summer there. I imagine she was probably about 10 years old. And she absolutely loved the farm. She learned how to milk a cow, and she played in the creek with her cousins, and she just had a wonderful time. And so she really looked forward to marrying my dad and being on the farm, and loved gardening, and always had lots of flowers. No matter what she planted in the garden, she had rows of flowers that she would always keep there and pick some of them, but just have them there for the beauty of and the joy of it.
My guest today is Joyce Rupp. Her most recent book is Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, and you're welcome to join our conversation and share your stories today as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour is author, spiritual midwife, Joyce Rupp. Her most recent book is Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. And again, you're welcome to join our conversation. I know that this is an experience, you losing your mother and working through that grief is an experience that resonates with a lot of people. So if you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Joyce, we've been talking about some of the really wonderful things about your mother, and we will talk about more of them as the hour goes on. But you also write about this idea that there's a dark side, a shadow side to our gifts or mm-hmm. strengths. And you write about what you see as the dark side of your mother's resilience. Can you explain that idea for me?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up, Charity, because Because my mother was so resilient and she had a lot of gusto for life, she's very independent. I mean, she'd learned that from being taken care of her siblings, you know, when she was 17. And so as she aged and she had to become more dependent, you know, she had a lot of health issues. She had diabetes. She had degenerative disc in her back, had a couple of heart attacks, congestive heart failure. So, you know, it was really tough for her to accept that she couldn't be this energetic, vibrantly alive woman that she had been, and how to move from a doing life into more of a being life. That was a really hard thing for Mom, and she fought it. She really fought it for especially the last couple of years. About a year before she died, she finally accepted it, but she would call herself lazy, you know, because she'd been so able to do everything. She'd go, "Oh, I'm just lazy," you know. When she wasn't able to get out of her chair, she couldn't cook anymore and had to get meals on wheels, and really struggled with having someone need to come in and clean her house. She'd always, you know, been able to do that. And I think, you know, so that the positive part quality for Mom was her independence and her resilience. But I think the shadow side was that, you know, she was also having to be dependent. You know, I think that was the other part of it.
Well, she also, she didn't give herself a lot of credit for her incredible, you know, resilience and her abilities. And she obviously had a lot of special gifts. And a very difficult part of that for you and for the entire family was, although I know you were very close with your father and he had a lot of wonderful qualities, but he was extremely hard on your mother verbally and belittled her a lot. Mm-hmm. And you watched her just take that over the years and internalize that.
Yeah, you know, that was the most difficult chapter in my book to write about. And it was that my dad had an anger issue. And Mom and Dad lived in the time when patriarchy was really accepted. I mean, you didn't even question it then. And so added to that was this anger that my dad would have toward my mom and in front of us children, you know, would call her stupid at times. And I mean, my mother was really an intelligent person, but I think when you hear that so often, you begin to believe that, you know, you really are stupid, that you're not as intelligent. And ironically, we know it was my mother that kept the financial ledger, and she was very intelligent. And so, you know, until her last years, you know, complimenting her, she had a real hard time accepting that. That's a shadow side again. And, you know, I would say, oh, she said, "You don't do that for me." And I said, "Well, you're really worth it, Mom, you know." And I think she eventually began to start believing that, yes, you know, she was intelligent. She was a valuable person. She, you know, but I remember my uncle called her one time, and my dad's brother, and he said, "You know, Hilda, you're one of the 10 women in my life that I think are most remarkable." And she told me about that, and she didn't know what to do with that. She just couldn't. It was like, oh, he couldn't have been for real. And I said, "Mom, you are. People love you, and look at your life. Look what you've done." But I think that's there, and it certainly came from the whole patriarchal part of it. You know, she always looked to Dad first before she did something, at least until she was in her mid-50s. And Dad always had the last word. And she just gradually, you know, she accepted that. So, yeah, and when Dad died, you know, she took back her independence. That was a neat thing to see. You know, she moved off the family farm about 2 months after he died, bought her condo, made all those choices herself, and, you know, had always taken care of her finances, which is different from a lot of widows. And so she loved her life. You know, she just started coming alive. And one of the chapters I wrote was about her relationship with her next-door neighbor in the condo next to her. I just always love how that happened. And Mom was 70 then, and the woman next door, her name was Wilda, and my mom's name is Hilda. And Hilda and Wilda became best friends. It was wonderful to see that late-in-life friendship. And Wilda died about 8 years later, and Mom turned to me at the funeral, and she said, "You know, I think Wilda was just probably the best friend I ever had." And it was because Wilda brought her to life again. I didn't know my mother liked symphonies. I didn't know she liked to go to plays. She never did it, you know, when Dad was alive, because Dad didn't like it or didn't want to go. Right. And so, yeah, and so she kind of, in a sense, I would say, broke out of that shadow, patriarchal, negative voice that she had for a long time.
This story is so, I mean, it's heartbreaking and also makes you feel good at the same time, but to think that she really blossomed in some ways and got to do some of the things that she'd always longed to do. Yeah. But at the same time, she was getting older and her body began to betray her. And I wonder if you'd read us a little bit from your chapter called Clipped Wings.
Oh, I'd be glad to do that as soon as I find it here for you. My mother's motto in her later years of life was fly while you still have wings. And so when I thought about her aging process and the diminishment that was happening for her, I thought of that metaphor of clipped wings. And so this is from that chapter. No matter how much of an effort we make to maintain the fundamental criterion of preserving independence and control, there usually comes a time when an aging person faces dependence on others. To resist or ignore this reality only increases anxiety and distress. I noticed this with Mom during one of her hospitalizations for pneumonia, when she grew increasingly restless and anxious to be back home. She detested being in the hospital. Although rarely complaining about the care she received, Mom often voiced a longing to go home, whether the stay was long or short. In her weakened condition with pneumonia, going home was not an option. I thought maybe talking with Mom about her resistance might help alleviate a bit of impatience, so one day I probed a little deeper as to why she loathed being there. Mom's honesty touched me as she expressed the helpless feeling she experienced in the hospital. She ended her disclosure by saying, "I hate not being able to do things for myself." There it was, the root cause of the restlessness and resistance. More than discomfort or concern about the illness, she dreaded the short-circuiting of her autonomy. As I observed my mother's struggle to continue taking care of herself without anyone's assistance, I thought of the strong spirit that developed as a young woman tending to her motherless siblings. During this period, Mom's independence thrived. No matter what kind of hardship, illness, or loss came along in her life after that, she managed a way through it. This ability of hers grew stronger after Dad's death when she grew accustomed to managing her own finances, making big decisions like leaving the farm and buying a condominium, deciding where she lived and how she lived. All of this was hers to manage. Gradually, the strong winds of aging threatened to undo her independence. Each damaging illness and health crisis robbed her of control over her life bit by bit.
Joyce Rupp reading from her latest book, Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. You also write in the book about something that you call ancestral grief. And that's an idea that you took from another writer.
Yes.
But explain what you mean by ancestral grief.
Oh, you know, I think, Charity, as I wrote the book, I think that was just one of the biggest ahas for me. One of the real gifts of writing the book, and there were many. I was reading Francis Weller's book, Healing the Gates of Grief, I think is the title of it. But he names different gates of grief we go through, and the fifth one he named was ancestral grief. And I had never thought about this in all my studies and research with grief, at least not in the way that he describes it. And he starts off and talks about how when our ancestors came to this country, they didn't have time to grieve leaving their homeland. You know, they left their language, they left their relatives, they left a whole culture and way of life. Because when they came, they immediately had to find a job, had to, you know, get themselves planted in this country and get started. And so then when their children came along, they inherited that grief. And that grief might not even have been named, but they carried it in their spirit, you know, in some way. And so that's carried down. And how that helped me was that whenever Mom would talk about her mother dying, you know, giving birth to that 13th child, I always felt this sadness just welling up in me. And I just wanted to sit with her and cry and cry. Of course, I didn't because she wasn't crying. And I thought, well, I guess I can't cry now. And I mean, each time that would happen for me. And when I read about ancestor grief, I thought, that's exactly what it is. I'm carrying the grandmother's grief over her child's death and her poverty. I'm carrying my mother's grief over her mother's death. And it's time to let go of that. It's time to, you know, face that and be with it. That was a very freeing kind of experience for me to read that.
You were carrying that. What do you think your mother was carrying, because she never had the time to deal with those feelings?
She wouldn't have. You know, I mean, immediately after her mother dies, she's taken care of the household, and that went on. And I think also two things. Nobody knew anything about grief at that time. I mean, there were no books written about grieving. I mean, at the most, someone might mention it, but I mean, you were supposed to go on with your life. And my mother was, I think she was 100% German, and Germans, you know, you just go on, you don't talk about things, and you toughen it up, and, you know, you don't cry about things. So that's what she did, yeah. And so I think she just carried that and now we know that tears are a very good thing and healthy in grieving, but I don't think it was looked upon at that time. Tears were looked upon more like a weakness. That meant that you weren't strong enough to deal with the hard things that life gave you.
Well, and your mother also lost a child when he was 23 years old.
Yes, yes.
And your brother, mm-hmm. and he drowned.
Mm-hmm.
How did she cope with that horrible loss?
You know, that was the independence and the shadow side again, you know, because she was so, had learned to be so strong. When Dave drowned, the only time I saw Mom cry was the right standing by the casket before we closed it. She kept all of that in. And I look back and I think, I don't know how she did that. But it was that learned experience, and it was a cultural and social way that people had learned it at that time. And so that's how she did it. I carried a lot of that grief with me. I never cried at that funeral. It wasn't the thing to do, you know? And so all of that, yes, that also was a part of that ancestral grief. And so Mom carried that. And she also had two of her closest friends drown in Canada on a fishing trip about 10 years after my brother drowned. So that also was a part of Mom's journey.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to your other siblings about that idea? Is that something that you feel you share with them, or is that a burden that you have carried?
You know, I haven't talked with all of my siblings about that. I'm very close to my older sister, and we certainly have talked about that and have agreed that was a part of it. With my other siblings, not so much so. I haven't shared that. Yeah.
Well, when I was reading about the idea of ancestral grief, and I also, you are a member of the Servite Order, mm-hmm. and I'm not Catholic, so I wasn't really familiar with what the Servite Order is, but in reading about it, its objects are the sanctification of its members, preaching the gospel, and the propagation of devotion to the Mother of God, with special reference to her sorrows. And that made me see a parallel there between your carrying your mother's sorrows, mm-hmm. and also carrying Mary's sorrows.
That's a beautiful, beautiful insight, Charity. I kind of forget because it's so imbued in me, but when I entered my community, you know, our devotion has always been to Mary standing at the foot of the cross and being with those who suffer. And so, you know, I just hadn't thought about it in that particular way before, but carrying that suffering and leading to compassion. You know, I'm a co-director of the Institute of Compassionate Presence now, and it's amazing to me always how that came about, and I absolutely love teaching the compassion program. It's a 4-day program, and we look at compassion from all different angles, from, you know, the psychological, the social, the cultural, the medical, the scientific, the spiritual. And it really does. You know, I never thought about it, but it all goes back to what I experienced in my family. Thank you very much. And then what I learned in my community and the support I've had from our membership, you know, how we support each other and trying to be there for other persons. And so, yeah, I'm going to think about that some more. Thank you very much.
Now, you're also a hospice volunteer. How long have you been involved with hospice?
You know, I'm not working with hospice now, but I was a volunteer for 15 years. I started when I lived in Boulder, Colorado. I was doing graduate work in transpersonal psychology, and I wanted to do some volunteer work. And because I'd written the book on grief and I talked about it, I thought the last thing I want to do is work with hospice. But there were so many volunteers for everything in Boulder. The only thing that was open was hospice. And so I did the training, and I absolutely loved working with hospice. I learned so much more. And again, a very compassionate place to be with someone who's in end of life, and being with the families. And it's a very... very privileged position to be there, you know, and to be trusted to be there as a volunteer. I met so many wonderful people. And one of the big things for me personally is that it really helped me not be afraid of death. You know, I really see now that death can be a meaningful and it can be a peaceful process, I think. So...
Well, and we'll talk more about your experiences with your mother as she aged and needed your help and didn't always want your help. And coming up in just a moment, I'm talking with Joyce Rupp. Her most recent book is Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. She has a mini retreat coming up on May 5th in Dubuque at the Shalom Spirituality Center. And, you can find out more about that and her other appearances and other events that are coming up on her website, joycerupp.com. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. You're welcome to join us. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest this hour is Joyce Rupp. She is the author of many books. Her most recent is Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. We've been talking this hour about her mother, Hilda Rupp, her life, which I guess in many ways was ordinary, but she really was a remarkable woman. And Joyce... as she aged, you talked about how, you know, she was such an independent woman, such a resilient woman, and part of the hard part of that was she had a very difficult time asking for help. And I wonder, the reason I brought up your volunteering with hospice is I wonder, in some ways, is it almost easier for people to ask for help from someone who's not a part of their family? You ran into a lot of problems with your mother not wanting assistance. Is it easier when you're not as close in some ways?
I think that's probably true. I know with Mom, because she had lived her whole life needing to be so independent, that it was very difficult for her. But I think in general, it's hard for people to ask for help. And as a hospice volunteer, I found that sometimes it was difficult for people to ask for help. You know, I mean, I think that's part of our human nature. We much prefer being in the controlling position of giving than we do of receiving. And when we ask for help, it means I am not in charge totally. I need your help with this. And probably it is easier for a stranger to do that. I think that's probably true. But I just think in general, it's difficult. And in our American culture, it's very difficult because we are the I can do people, you know.
Right. Independence is a very important part of our culture. Well, I wonder, you yourself are an extremely vibrant, healthy, strong, youthful woman in her 70s. And you're starting to see that people are reacting to you differently because of your age. And you share some of your thoughts about that in the book. I wonder if you could read a little bit about that for us.
Well, this particular chapter that I have is called The Bathtub Question. And I started off the chapter by talking about an experience I had when I was in the East and I was scheduled to speak that night. And the coordinator had me staying with a family I didn't know. And so the woman of the household said, well, I'll take you and show you where you're going to be staying before your talk. And so we went in her house and we walked upstairs. I had my suitcase and she stopped at the top of the stairs where the bathroom was. And she looked at me and she said, well, are you going to take a shower in the morning? And I was kind of startled. I'd never been asked that question. And I said, well, yes. And she said, then she said to me, oh, can you get your legs over the bathtub? And I was just floored with that question. I couldn't believe it. I thought, well, of course I could get my legs over the bathtub. You know, it's like I'm very active. But I didn't say anything. I just very nicely said, yes, I can. And then I went to my room and I was by myself and I was like fuming about that question. But then I started thinking about it and I thought, you know, my hostess is the age I was when my mother was my age. And I thought of my mother as really old at that point. And so that's how she's looking at me. You know, she's looking at my white hair. She's looking at my age and thinking, wow, you know, I have an old person here. I better take care of her. So that really got me to thinking about, yes, I'm an older person. And it helped me then again to come into my mother's life and to see, and I did know later after Mom died and I reflected on it that I didn't realize how I treated her as an older person. And so I'm going to read just a little bit from this chapter. It's called The Bathtub Question. Because adult children have a tendency to take over their elderly parents' lives, it's not surprising that these parents often refrain from speaking about certain incidents. In her last years, Mom fell down in her home more often than she admitted. I sometimes heard about this from one of her friends who let it slip out in conversation. Mom might tell me about it, but only months later. More than one older friend of mine has mentioned taking a spill, having a memory glitch that might have involved serious consequences, or almost hitting someone while backing out of a parking place. They relate these things in a low voice, adding, "I never tell my kids about this," fearing their freedom to choose and make decisions will be snatched away. Sometimes our elders are in denial about their aging impairments, but they have every right to be heard and respected, even if they are not capable of making the final decision. Each time any of my siblings or I stepped back and let our mother make necessary decisions regarding her health and well-being, we allowed her still to be in charge of her life. I did not realize at the time what a much-needed gift of confidence this gave her. Moving into acceptance of old age takes time, both for the aged person and the one who cares about him or her. It took quite a while for me to truly understand and accept Mom's movement into a more physically limited sphere of life. Only gradually did I accept the reality that the resilient and ever-energetic mother of mine could not do what used to be a natural part of her life. Now that I do understand more of what it is like to age, I cringe inside when I hear younger persons chiding older ones. Move faster. Stand up straight. Stop repeating. Pay attention. Don't eat that. Speak more clearly. I long to have them slip inside the skin of someone whose youthfulness has passed them by. And I long to have my aged mother here again, so I could be kinder and more understanding.
Joyce Rupp reading from her book, Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. And Joyce, I have to say, I felt like you were a little unfair to yourself in this, because you talked about some exchanges that you had with your mother where you really wish that you had listened better. But what you were doing, I mean, there's an example of your mother had always kept an immaculate kitchen, and as she got older, it was much harder for her to clean, and you noticed that the kitchen cupboards, especially the lower shelves where she couldn't reach, were getting grimy, and so you offered to clean her kitchen. You went over and you cleaned her kitchen, and she was so frustrated with you as she sat in the living room, and she was trying to tell you why it bothered her. You were trying to tell her why you were doing it, but, I mean, you were frustrated with yourself for not listening better, but at the same time, I mean, don't we all need to, and including your mother and all of our mothers and fathers and the people in our lives, don't we all need to look at the intention behind an action too and say, okay, I don't want her to clean my kitchen, but it's really kind of her. She's doing it out of love.
You know, that is so true, Charity. And I had a wonderful relationship with my mom. I just had some regrets after my mother died. I think it's part of grieving those regrets, you know, and of course now I've set those and and put them to rest. But that day, you know, when I looked back on it, I think the reason Mom couldn't be with my intention enough is I think she just was so miserable that day. You know, she couldn't breathe very well. Her ankles were so swollen, she couldn't get her shoes on. And when she called into me and said, you know, do you know what that makes me feel like, you out there in the kitchen and I'm sitting here in my chair doing nothing? I went in and I did a little sermon with her. You know, I told her, well, you know, we had 8 kids. I need to do something for you. And I'm so glad to be here, yaddy, yaddy. But, you know, really, if I had just, I wish so much I had said, would you just tell me, no, what does it feel like? I don't know. What is it like for you? I think she might have gotten more relief, a lot more relief than me trying to clean her kitchen. And that just taught me, it's a really good lesson. Ask people what they want. And I think that's one of the big mistakes with older people is I assume, I know what they need. And sometimes what they need is so different than what I think they need. And so if they're capable of responding, you know, and saying what it is, wow, I really want to listen now. And I know if Mom were here, she'd say, oh, that thing, you know, she would have forgotten it long ago. But I had to deal with it, and I think I learned from it. So.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, your mother wasn't going to ask you for very many things. She had a very hard time asking for assistance. So it's just such a difficult dance of communication. You know, yes, we need to be better at listening, but asking for help is so very hard.
It is. And every day is different. You know, I think that's another thing with older people. It's like, and also, I always want to say, you know, no one size fits all. You know, we all have our own relationship with our parent or our loved one. And, wow, it can be so different from one day to the next. It can be different with how they're feeling, you know, physically how they're feeling or emotionally how they are at that time or mentally. And so it's like, wow, you just got to enter in each time, each moment, each time you're with them and be open to what might occur.
We have an email from Jane, and she asks, what would you offer as suggestions for those of us in midlife with aging parents who are still alive and living well? Suggestions as far as how best to embrace our time with the time we have left with them.
Oh, thank you, Jane, for that question. You know, one of my regrets after my mother died is that I didn't spend more time with her. You know, when we're in midlife, it's a very positive thing. We're busy, active, we have our lives, and that's a good thing. And it's very easy to forget how lonely older people can be, even if your parents are well. You know, to visit regularly and establish that relationship as well as you can, because when they get to the place where, you know, they're going to need to ask for help, as Charity has mentioned, they'll be more likely, I think, to do it. And you'll be, I think, more open to your own vulnerability and being with an aging parent. But I think it's a time element. And that's the part in our culture, again, that we don't, you know, we cherish our time. We don't want to, you know, spend that time other than just really being with what we have to do. And it's very valuable to spend it with a parent.
Now, once you learned that your mother really loved adventures and traveling, you did take her on a lot of trips with you.
Oh, I did. And that's where I really got to be friends with my mom. You know, Dad died, I was 43. And I really, you know, I love Mom, but she was just my mom. You'll understand that. She was just my mom. And Dad died, and suddenly, like, there's Mom. She's alone. And so I started taking her on my travels. You know, I was doing talks around the country, and she loved it. And we would just have the best talks, you know, on the plane and wherever we were traveling. And that's when I got to know her as a woman, you know, and as a friend. And I can truly say when Mom died, we were really good friends and a great respect for one another. And I learned so much about my mother that I hadn't even thought to ask her about, you know, when she was just, quote, my mom.
Is that something else that you've been able to share with siblings? Were you able to help them also get to know her as you had these opportunities to spend time alone with her?
Well, you know, each of my siblings has their, I have seven, there's seven of us remaining. And so my six siblings, they each have their own relationship with my mother. Some of them, I think, have more of an open and in-depth relationship than others. But certainly, you know, we talked a lot, you know, after Mom died, those weeks after Mom died. And I think, you know, certainly now it's interesting as my siblings have read this book. Almost everyone except my older sister has said to me, I learned things about Mom I didn't know, you know. But we all have our own relationship with our parent. And so we will, you know, we'll have different stories.
You also write about talking with your mother about death. And as your mother got older and she had a lot of health problems, she got to be quite open in talking about her impending death. And that was hard for you to talk about because, of course, you didn't want it to happen. But is that an important lesson that we need to learn, that if someone wants to talk about it, we need to be open to it too?
I'm really glad you brought that up, Charity, because I think that's, of the things in the book, I'd say it's certainly in the top five of what I would like to, the message I'd like to share with my readers. You know, it is not easy to talk about death. You know, I think no matter what our relationship with a parent, it's very rare for us to hope that they'll die. And with anyone, I think death is not a topic that we talk about easily. My mother, as she aged, she did talk about it, and she wanted to talk about it. And I remember the one time I came home, and I always listened to her because I thought, oh, Mom's death is a long way off. I can talk about this, you know, for my hospice training and
right.
stuff. But boy, as it got closer, it got harder. And this one day, I always visited her. I spent a weekend a month with her. I lived about 3.5 hours each way. And so I drive home, and so we were having lunch, and she said, oh, by the way, just very calmly, oh, by the way, I went to Greenwood Funeral Home last week, and I picked out my casket, and I got my prayer card, and I paid for everything, so you kids won't have to worry about that. Oh, my stomach just went plunk. I thought, oh, this is too close. I don't want to talk about this at all. But I did. I mean, I listened to her, and I thanked her for doing that, and I just knew it was really important. And I know that older people, there are many older people want to avoid it, but a lot of them want to talk about it and their kids don't. And so they say, oh, you're not going to go for a long time. And then they just, it's dismissed and they don't get to share what they want to with them. Yeah. So I think it's vital to listen and to respond when they want to talk about, you know, the end of life issues.
So in publishing this book and having people read it, you told me before we went on the air today that you've been really surprised by how it resonates with so many people. Now, having read it myself, that doesn't surprise me at all. But what has surprised you?
You know, I thought that people would look at the lessons on aging, and that's mainly what they would focus on. I have been astounded at almost every single person that I've heard from, many, many people in the short time it's been out, just about 2 months, is how they'll all say, it reminded me of my mother. And they'd right away, they'll write to me about their mothers, or they'll write and they'll say, that's the era I grew up in. Oh, I remember so well the Depression or what it was like to not have running water, electricity. But what I've just loved hearing people talk about their own mothers and how it's brought back these memories. And I've had several people write and say, this is really helping me to deal with my own grief about my mother, an issue I haven't spent enough time with. So,
and this really helped you to move on as well.
It definitely did. Yeah, I feel so differently now than I did when I started writing the book, and I realize again that what I have taught I need to live, and that is to really grieve well. One has to have the courage to step into that grief and be with it, to walk with it, and let it live its way out until we come to peace and move on from the sadness.
Joyce, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Charity. Thank you so much for having me. I just love being with you.
Oh, well,
thank you.
Joyce Rupp, her most recent book is Fly While You Still Have Wings and Other Lessons My Resilient Mother Taught Me. You can find out more about the book and more about events that are coming up on Joyce's schedule on her website, joycerupp.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.